Welcome back to Open Line at WOSU 820 NPR News. I'm Fred Anderle. This hour on the program, Columbus Symphony Orchestra management and musicians are headed back to the bargaining table to attempt to forge a labor agreement that would allow the symphony to continue to exist. On Tuesday, musicians offered to take a 6.5% pay cut. Now, the orchestra management had previously proposed a reported 40% pay cut. That's far apart, but the two sides have agreed to meet nevertheless. Meanwhile, the summer picnic with the pop series was canceled by the Orchestra Board of Trustees. They cited lack of funds to mount the series, and the fall 2008 concert schedule remains in doubt. Can the Columbus Symphony survive? What needs to happen to ensure that? So this hour, we'll talk with CSO management and musicians in separate half hours because they are negotiating, after all, privately. At 11:30 or so, we'll talk with musicians. And now speaking for symphony management, Robert Buzz Trafford is chair of the Columbus Symphony Orchestra Board of Trustees. Buzz, good to have you here.
Fred, it's great to be here. Thank you very much.
Tony Beadle is executive director of the symphony. Welcome back.
Thank you very much.
We're at 614-292-8513. If you'd like to join our conversation with a question or a comment, and you can email your question or comment to openline@wosu.org. Buzz Trafford, new offer from the musicians. They're willing to take a 6.5% pay cut. You had asked for a pay cut that was greater. The media reported 40%. You say it's more like 25%. The musicians say that would take the average musician pay from $55,000 to $33,000 a year. So it seems, although you're going to meet and have a conversation, that management and musicians are very, very far apart. So is there a reason for optimism here at all?
Well, you're right. We are a long way apart. And the important thing is that we're going to try to continue talking. I think the whether there's a reason for optimism is a little unclear to me. And I have to tell you that the most important thing we can do is try to get everybody on the same page in terms of what the facts are. Mm-hmm. And that's becoming an increasing challenge. And it became a greater challenge when the musicians held their press conference the other day.
Where do you dispute the facts, or what do you want to clarify here?
Well, there's a central and fundamental fact here, which is that the maximum amount of revenue upon which we can base a responsible budget is $9.5 million.
Mm-hmm. Per year, yeah. Mm-hmm.
The other day, the musician said, no, that number is really 11.1. And that is dead wrong, and it confuses the discussion. You know, it's important that we not distract from the real facts with facts that just confuse and delay the time when we can talk about what we really need to be talking about.
You told the New York Times that likely that by June 1st, the symphony would suspend operations. Does that mean is that still in order by June 1st? You'd be out of money? And does that mean that the management staff will be laid off at that point?
Well, definitely it's a suspension of operations in terms of the orchestra, certainly. But yes, we will be going to a skeleton staff just in order to keep the doors open and to do the necessary work for, and I'll be optimistic for a moment, an 08-09 season.
Mm-hmm. So some people will simply be laid off at least temporarily.
Yes.
Is there any reason for optimism that the orchestra is going to survive?
I think that in an industry where there are 250 applicants for every position in an orchestra, that nobody wants to see another orchestra. If you're in the union, you don't want to see an employment unit go away. Mm-hmm. And so I think that something will happen so as to not to remove that. Because where orchestras have gone down and not come back, it has been a civic blight and not easy to remount. Whereas orchestras that have done what we're attempting to do have the opportunity to come back.
Mm-hmm. But if I'm understanding it correctly, if you want to keep all 53 full-time musicians and not cut them back to 31, which was in question to do that, if you want to keep all 53, they'd be making an average of $33,000 a year. Is that right?
No, that's actually not right, Fred. That's what the musicians have said, but it's not quite correct. They actually would have the opportunity to earn a minimum of $35,000 mm-hmm. a year. And then various of the musicians are paid more than that, and there are various things that add to their compensation. So the minimum would drop to about 35. There would be additional sums on top of that that would vary by musician and vary by the particular kinds of performances in which they participated.
Mm-hmm. Of course, that's a pretty drastic pay cut. I guess the average salary now is, what, upper 50s right now, dropping to, mm-hmm. and of course some of the musicians have said, gee, how can we support a family on, you know, $35,000 a year, $33,000 a year in Columbus, Ohio? That would be very difficult.
It will be a sacrifice. It will be difficult. What accompanies that reduction in compensation is a reduction in the amount of time that they must devote to the symphony. So
fewer programs.
Well, it's fewer weeks, and in fact, it's fewer months. It actually would reduce their time commitment by 3 months to the symphony, by 12 weeks. We would drop from 46 to 34, and there would be the opportunity to earn money through other jobs, which many of the musicians do now. It's interesting. I met with Bruce Ridge, who's the president of the International Union, on Monday. And one of the things he said to me when we met was how promising the future was for the Jacksonville Symphony, which just went through a 9-week lockout and an unfortunate dispute. Musicians at the Jacksonville Symphony make $28,000 a year. They're the most highly compensated orchestra musicians in the state of Florida.
Mm-hmm. You know, the Board of Trustees has been accused from various quarters of lacking the passion for the orchestra and the passion for fundraising, including your music director, Maestro Hirakami, you know, among others. How would you like to answer that? Does the Board of Trustees, are they disinvolved? Do you care whether the orchestra survives, Buzz?
Fred, you know, one of the most disappointing accusations in all of this discussion has been the suggestion that the board lacks passion. The board has already raised this year in excess of $5 million for the orchestra. We have, at this point, 26 or 27 active board members. All but one has already made a personal contribution to the orchestra, and that one I'm confident will before the mm-hmm. season's over. So they've backed it with their time. They've backed it financially. There's a tremendous amount of passion. All of us want to see the orchestra succeed. Mm-hmm. But as a board and as a group that's responsible for making sure that the paychecks that we issue clear the bank, we have to have a significant amount of financial sobriety. And it's a heavy responsibility, I have to tell you. When I took this job on, the last thing I thought I would be worrying about is whether we could make payroll every 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. But frankly, that's taken up a lot of time and energy. The financial situation is that serious.
Tony Beadle, when I asked that question about did the board have passion, you smiled, and I wonder.
Well, because I'm thinking of the hours spent to keep the doors open. And I like to use the comparison in the corporate world where a layoff has to be enacted and the employee shows up at the office and the door is locked and they're escorted out of the building, one of those horrible scenarios, which I'm sure more than a few of your listeners have been through. We, on the other hand, our passion takes shape in trying to keep this arts institution going, a going concern, and open. And, you know, it takes a lot more than just wearing a pink rubber band on your wrist and catching a comp ticket from a musician and showing up at the last concerts. It's a commitment that's full time. And I'd say that many of our board members, and I'm sure Buzz can speak to this, how many hours of his day is consumed with symphony business. And I kid him once in a while about, well, are you going to practice law today?
Because a full-time attorney, of course,
yes.
as Buzz Crawford is here. A number of people in the community have indicated distress, Buzz, that the Board of Trustees canceled the summer picnic with the pop series. They say, well, you know, if you were going to entice people to contribute to the symphony, and this is one of the most popular things the symphony does, why wouldn't you have let that go on?
Well, we would have loved to have the summer season. You know, it's one of, personally, one of my favorite times. The community is probably less distressed about it than the board was having to do it. The reality was we didn't have the financial means to do it. And so whatever the benefits of doing it might have been, we couldn't afford to do it. And it's that simple. And, you know, we shared that with the musicians in advance and told them that we really need to reach an agreement because if we do, there is funding available to help us. There are people that want to support this orchestra, generous people, but they have a simple requirement. We have to achieve a financially stable financial platform.
In terms of the summer picnic for the Pop series, several thousand, I imagine, go to each concert on average. I don't know what the average is, 2,000, 3,000.
Oh, it's more than that. It's closer to 4,000.
Closer to 4,000 at $20 a ticket.
It varies because we have tables and lawn seats. Yeah.
So isn't that enough to float a Pop series and break even?
Well, it does, but you also have to understand that you need working capital and the capital to have commitments to keep that going. And if you look at in terms of, you know, our struggle with cash flow, not only the having enough money to meet the expenses, I would have had to have several hundred thousand dollars in the bank last month in order to negotiate with artists and, mm-hmm. and get our vendors in line, that sort of thing. And so that's one issue. The other issue is there's a risk involved with the summer series because of weather. So whether it rains or not, we still pay. And that was a risk that would make it even more difficult for us to meet our vendors and pay our bills.
Does the symphony have an endowment, or did it?
You know, the symphony has a relatively small endowment. It ranges between $13 and $15 million. It's the result of the foresight of some of the corporate leaders about 20 years ago, something called the Trilogy Fund. And it's at the Columbus Foundation. It actually isn't the symphony's alone. It's there to support classical music. But we have been the largest, if not only, beneficiary of it. Mm-hmm. That's a small endowment, Fred, compared, for example, to Cleveland, Cincinnati, Indianapolis, Pittsburgh, all of which have endowments well in excess of $100 million.
Wouldn't that give you enough working capital to hire the guest artists for the Pops concert if you have $13 to $50 billion sitting by?
Yeah, let's be clear about Picnic. There was a complete lack of funds available to launch Picnic this year, and that's very unfortunate. Picnic in a good year breaks even. I mean, in a good year, it breaks even. It doesn't make money. You might make $5,000. Mm-hmm. In some years, Picnic loses money. As Tony mentioned, there's weather risk with Picnic. The first Picnic concert would have been in late June. Our payroll costs on a monthly basis are about $550,000, and we won't have the money to make payroll after the end of May.
Tony Beadle, I thought you asked a very interesting question in an online interview I saw. You said, here's an orchestra that's been in business around 57 years. Why doesn't it have a huge endowment, one to compete with some of the endowments that you just mentioned, like the Cincinnati Orchestra, for example? What's been happening with our community that we don't have a bigger endowment after 57 years?
I'm not the person to ask because I wasn't here, but, you know, I can only look forward. And you know, we don't talk enough about what if we get through our discussions and our negotiations and we have something that the community is going to accept and embrace, then the light is clearly there for now is the time for people to step forward and to build and help us to build an endowment such that this never happens again. But you have to have a case for the endowment. You have to show that you can run responsibly, show that your artistic product is intact or has room for growth, and to ask the community to come in and to ensure its future. When you look at our balance sheets in recent years and what we've had to do to maintain, I don't think we're there yet. And this is mm-hmm. part of that. So you have to, you know, I can't speak for the past. I'm sure there have been circumstances or variables that have not had that happen. It is kind of surprising, frankly, but I can't really speak to it.
You know, Ann Melvin, one of the very generous members of your Board of Trustees, supremely generous to the orchestra, told the Columbus Dispatch that she was first on the board in the 80s, and then she's back on the board in recent years, and she thinks the board is working three times as hard as it did in the 80s. But she says once you get beyond the faithful, the people who've always supported the orchestra, she told the Dispatch that the community didn't seem very interested in the arts.
I think if you were to look at any large arts institution in any city, you will find that same kind of perspective would hold, that there's always a small circle of major donors and people that have the means and exhibit their passion by those kinds of large donations like Ann Melvin has. But, you know, I'd say the arts here, it's probably like life in Afghanistan, that you've learned to survive it and do it and you know, have the joy of it nevertheless, because I know from my colleagues in the other arts institutions here that they're not in our position, but it's a struggle every year more than they'd like to have. And yet when you go to the things like the ballet, the art museum, the opera, the quality is amazing, truly, truly amazing. And that's the irony of this whole deal.
Tony Beadle is executive director of the Columbus Symphony Orchestra. Robert Buzz Trafford is chair of the Columbus Symphony Orchestra Board of Trustees. We're talking, obviously, with symphony management. After the half-hour break, we'll talk with symphony musicians. And as we mentioned, the management and musicians are headed back to the bargaining table to attempt to forge a labor agreement that would allow the symphony to continue to exist. We're at 614-292-8513. You can email your comments or questions to openline@wosu.org. Call us. I want you to make your comments and your questions brief so we can get to all of you this hour. Sebastian is on the line. Hello, Sebastian.
Hello. This is Sebastian. I'm calling from OSU. And I want to direct my question to both of you, Tony and Buzz, about the Board of Trustees. And I think they don't lack passion, but they do lack initiative. It seems as though, to me, that one could target the OSU donor base more wisely. The Board of Trustees, the President's Office, the Foundation, and here I speak of the Foundation at OSU, these are all donors for whom $9.5 million is the remodeling fee on their various houses. This is not difficult, I would have thought, to reach a donor base which isn't on your masthead. I give what I can. The person above me at the giving level is a professor of Spanish and Portuguese. There's nobody in the basic donor base at OSU that supports Columbus Symphony Orchestra the way it should. And okay, I wondered, so what is that? What's the reason for that lockout?
Who would like to answer, Buzz? Tony?
Well, I'm at a little bit of a disadvantage because I'm not sure it's true that those who contribute to OSU don't presently contribute to the symphony. I've never compared the two lists. I will say this. I am confident that the board and the staff have reached out far and wide to seek support and to seek additional donations to the Columbus Symphony. There really isn't anyone in a potential donor community who, since the middle of January, certainly hasn't been aware of the significant need for support that the Columbus Symphony has. If you go back to Fred's question about an endowment, there's an important piece of all of this that relates to an endowment. We hired a consultant to talk with us about an endowment and how to raise it and how to reach additional donors. And that was done last fall. And one of the reasons we're trying to do what we're trying to do is that the conclusion was that we presently have no meaningful opportunity to raise an endowment. And until we put the symphony on a stable financial footing, we will not. And so that's why we're doing what we're doing.
Thanks, Sebastian. Our next caller here, Leslie. Hello, Leslie. You're on the air.
Hello. I'm wondering, over half of the budget is accounted for with non-musician expenses. I have not heard it addressed where cuts will be made in this, and particularly I have not heard how it is accounted for that CAPA's exorbitant increase in rent expenditures is accounted for over 68% from the year 2006 to 2007. That has increased, made a big dent in the budget. How is that being accounted for?
Let's clarify this. CAPA raised your rent at the Ohio Theater by 68%. Is that right or wrong?
Leslie's question is an excellent one, and I said a minute ago that the musicians' press release was not helpful and their press conference. There is no truth whatsoever, none whatsoever, to the assertion that was made with respect to the CAPA rent. The gentleman who made that assertion is misinformed and dead wrong, and CAPA issued a statement yesterday pointing out that his numbers were both false and misleading. Both CAPA and the symphony are extremely disappointed that the musicians would sponsor that kind of misinformation. As I said at the beginning, you know, it's important to have a community debate, but the debate really ought to center on the facts. And the report that was issued the other day, the one that was trumpeted at that press conference, is a disservice to the community. It's a disservice to the symphony. It's a disservice to the media that's trying to cover this. And Leslie, you're simply one of those who has been misled by it.
Mm-hmm. What is the actual rate of rent increase?
There's very little rent increase from year to year. It's about $20,000. We pay CAPA, you know, the total CAPA rent last year was in the neighborhood of $230,000. We pay CAPA, in addition to rent, we reimburse them for the cost of stagehands. That was about another $125,000 to $130,000. There's a Kappa restoration fee, which is a $2.50 a ticket charge. Went up $4,000 from year to year. So there is no material difference in the rent from year to year, and it's a disservice to this discussion and a disservice to the prospects for reaching a resolution to have those kinds of false statements made.
So there's no increase, you're saying, in your fees to Kappa?
That's right.
Zero from year to year?
It's minimal.
Minimal.
It's minimal. There
it's
is,
for 2%, example, 5%?
Well,
less. And it also varies by the usage. So, for example, depending on how many concerts we have in the hall, rehearsals, but then we pay rentals for when we use the pavilion level for receptions, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So those are all year to year variables. You're never going to get dead zero every year, except our office rent. That happens to be they've held to the same price for a number of years now. And I also say that when you look at what Kappa charges, they're not in the realm of theaters rented by orchestras. They're not out of line, not
okay.
at all.
Next question here. Bob. Hi, Bob. Quickly.
Yes, I have a couple of questions. I guess the first thing is, if you're expecting a 25 or 35 or 40% pay cut out of the musicians, how have your other vendors responded when you've asked them to take 25 or 35 or 40% less money?
Well, we haven't asked other vendors to take less money. The other vendors also aren't being asked to give less. And in the case of the musicians, we are proposing about a 25% reduction in the amount of time that we're asking them to devote to the symphony. So that's a part of my response to you.
What about cuts in the management employees' salaries? Tony, will you be taking a cut along with the
musicians? Yes, there's a cut. Your comment about raising a family at $33,000. Well, there are people in my office that do raise families at $33,000. Not that we want that, but there's a cut there. There are some of our vendors that will be asked to help us out with cuts.
When you say a vendor, you mean?
Could be suppliers, people, printers, that sort of thing. And they've been doing that this year, actually helping us out because they understand our position, and we're going to have to ask them to do that a bit longer.
May I ask, will you take a salary cut?
I'm on board for that, yes.
Mm-hmm. And by what percent would you say?
Probably at least 10%.
Mm-hmm. All right.
So more likely 15.
Right. And Fred, it's important, again, to point out that Tony won't be asked to work less. Tony will still have a full-time 52-week-a-year job. We aren't giving him 3 months off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Yes, Tony, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that, more draconian even is some of our ability to have resources for things like development and marketing, because those of necessity have to come down too to meet this budget. So we have to be smarter than ever in terms of how we market and marketing strategies and to using the resources that less resources that we'll have available.
We have 2 minutes left here, and I wanted to ask you, you and the musicians have agreed in principle to go back to the bargaining table. Any date set, any time set as yet?
Well, actually, we've agreed to meet on Monday, Memorial Day.
Ah, right.
I emailed Doug Fisher as soon as I heard that he had announced at the press conference that they were willing to get back together. I sent him an email and asked him for dates. Turns out the only two dates he could give me in the next 2 weeks were Monday and Tuesday. Our lawyer can't be here on Tuesday, but we've agreed to meet with them on Monday.
Well, it does look, just looking at it from the outside, as though the symphony is about to go out of existence. Do you think of it that way?
No. We refuse to let ourselves think of it that way, Fred. We're spending at this point 10 or 12 hours a day trying to figure out how we can keep that from happening. But unless we get more realistic about the numbers and the challenge, and the musicians get more realistic about what I readily concede is a very real sacrifice, I'm afraid that could be the result.
Mm-hmm. Tony, anything to add here in the final minute?
No, I think that, at the end of the day, the community has to realize that for the symphony to go down is – counter to the talk of wanting to make Columbus a livable place, and I will say that our musicians add tremendously to the quality of life, not only on the stage of the Ohio Theater, but what they do throughout the community each and every day. and you can talk to them about how they bring quality of life to people in the next half hour.
Mm-hmm. So very big loss if the symphony goes for you personally, yes. Both as well. Buzz, for you as well. Big loss personally?
Well, a huge loss to me personally, and one that I feel for the entire community. We've really devoted all our energy and effort to preserving this and laying a foundation to make it even more wonderful than it already is.
Thanks for coming here, Buzz Tranford, Tony Beadle from the Symphony Management and Board of Directors. When we come back after these messages, we'll have musicians Doug Fisher and Charles Weatherby joining us in your phone calls at WOSU 820 NPR News.
Next time on Day to Day, a simple question.
What's the new what?
Some surprising answers.
Mismatching is the new matching.
Thai food restaurants are the new Mexican restaurants.
Disrespect is the new chivalry.
Syrup is the new this.
Friends are the new lovers.
Got that?
What?
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 Explore the shifting trends in young America.
What's the new what?
A special series from Youth Radio, starting next time on Day to Day.
Day to Day will be here in just about 30 minutes, beginning at noon, right here on WOSU 820 NPR News. Good morning, I'm Amy Jarovich. It's 61 degrees at 11:32. Thanks for joining us for Open Line this morning. Ask a young adult in Chengdu, China, whether they're an only child, and you'll likely hear the same answer, yes. A look at the children of China's one-child policy as NPR's coverage from China continues. That's coming up later today on All Things Considered from NPR News, which begins at 4 o'clock. And don't forget, you can now get all of the day's news from All Things Considered and the business news from Marketplace. Now on WOSU 89.7 FM, weekdays from 4 until 7 o'clock.
Support for WOSU comes from the Mid-Ohio Regional Planning Commission. OSU main campus employees can reduce their individual transportation costs by taking part in the new OSU vanpooling program. Information at osuvanpooling.morpc.org.
In the weather forecast for today, sunny skies and a high around 68.
Corporate partners help provide support for WOSU 820. Your business can join them and reach an educated, engaged, appreciative audience every day. Your business will also be associated with a trusted source for national and local news, arts, and culture. For more information, contact Christine Schottich at 247-4469. And thanks for supporting WOSU 820 NPR News.
And now, back to Open Line.
Welcome back to Open Line at WOSU 820 NPR News. I'm Fred Anderle. We're talking with the Columbus Symphony Orchestra management and musicians. This half hour, the musicians, as we mentioned, they are headed back to the bargaining table on Monday, in fact, management and musicians of the orchestra, in an attempt to save the orchestra and keep it going here. Doug Fisher, second bassoon of the Columbus Symphony Orchestra and president of the Central Ohio Federation of Musicians, Local 103, the American Federation of Musicians. Doug, welcome.
Thank you, Fred. We're delighted to be here.
Charles Weatherby is first violinist and concertmaster of the Columbus Symphony Orchestra. Charles Weatherby, good to have you here.
Thanks,
And you make the point you're not involved in the negotiations. You're simply speaking as a member of the orchestra. Doug, you are clearly involved in the negotiations. And we have a number of people online waiting, so I'm not going to give the phone number out again because I think we'll have difficulty getting to everybody. But if you keep your questions brief, callers, you know, we will do so. Well, Doug, management and musicians seem very far apart. You volunteered a 6.5% pay cut, approximately. You've said that the management is asking for a 40% pay cut. They say it's 25%. There's a bit of a difference in the figures, but however you interpret the figures, it seems pretty far apart. So, is there any reason for optimism about these talks coming up Monday?
Absolutely. I think that once the board acknowledges and recognizes the fact that there is a very large in-kind component of an average of $1.6 million a year, which they report to the IRS and which the auditors report, once they accept that fact and include that in the construction of the budget, it's just as valid as ticket sales, donations, and grants. Then we have a working budget of $11.1 million. And if 45% of that budget, $5 million, goes to the musicians, and the management and board have 55% to run the rest of the operation, there are at least 17 major orchestras in the country today that successfully run on that budget model. And we're very confident that the board and management, once they embrace this budget structure, that we will be able to make a deal with them.
So you've proposed a budget structure that you believe is a point of agreement here, potentially.
Yes.
The management has said, though, on the other hand, that your salary proposal actually increases the amount of the salaries necessary to be paid by about $100,000. And that's why I wonder, there's some very different interpretations of figures here.
Yes, I believe that Buzz is referring to the last offer we made at the table. But it's very important to remember that that offer was made in the context of a $9.5 million budget. What we are proposing in our new financial plan, again, is they recognize this $1.6 million in-kind component, which is real money. And once we embrace that and add it to the budget, 45% would go to the musicians, 55% would go to non-musician expenses, and we're confident that the symphony can thrive and succeed with that budget structure.
Okay. Initially, I think musicians are very critical of the board, accusing them of lack of passion, and so was the music director, Mr. Hirakami. But I noticed at the press conference the other day you said you very much need the Board of Trustees.
Absolutely. It's absolutely true. We need each other. And we have been critical of the board because, unfortunately, they placed us in a very adversarial posture last January when they released their strategic long-range plan without discussing it with us first. But we do need the board. And, in fact, people like Mr. Trafford donate countless hours to the symphony, and I'm sure his hourly rate is very high. So we really appreciate his sacrifice and his donation, not just of his time, of his funds. Ann Melvin, another board member, extraordinarily generous.
Is this a change of approach on your part to be so appreciative?
Our intent is to let the board know that we do appreciate the time and the money they donate and that we want to work with them. We believe they have the very best of intentions, as do we. And it's a problem of getting onto the same path, moving into the same direction. And once the board, management, and musicians are on the same path, moving in the same direction, hand in hand, we can go forward and cause the symphony to succeed.
So Chaz, two sides that have the best of intentions, you're saying. The musicians have the best of intentions. The board has the best of intentions. I mean, that would augur well for some kind of an agreement, I think.
Absolutely. And I think there's many reasons to be optimistic that we are going to come to an agreement and move forward as an organization. And just to echo what Doug said, as from a musician's perspective, someone who's not bound up in the negotiations, when we need to forge an agreement, there may be sharp differences at the table, I'm sure, over how money can be allocated and spent and so forth. But that in no way diminishes the musician's respect and appreciation for the board and what they do for the orchestra.
Now, in the previous board's offer, the union had said, well, it would be an average salary cut salaries in the upper 50s right now on the average for musicians. It would cut us to around $33,000 a year. And Buzz Trafford from the board of directors said in the previous half hour it would really be more like $35,000. But he said it's a couple of thousand different. But on the other hand, he said, look, you know, 3 months of the year you wouldn't have to be working for the orchestra. Musicians have other jobs. They give music lessons. They work around. So people don't just make the $33,000 or the $35,000. The opportunity there is there to make a lot more. And he said the Jacksonville Orchestra, which he cited as a success, the average pay was $28,000 a year. So couldn't you, as painful as that cut would be, couldn't you survive it?
I don't think so. You have to remember that we came to Columbus from orchestras like Jacksonville because Columbus was a greater orchestra artistically and financially. And so obviously musicians want to work where they can do the best for themselves and their families. And when Buzz says that there are other opportunities to work, I would love to know what they are. As the president of the union, I'm well acquainted with other opportunities, and there are none.
You don't teach music on the side?
Many of our musicians do teach, but they have already maxed out on the demand for teaching already. Mm-hmm. The proposition that suddenly having 3 weeks of free time means 3 more months of private teaching is ridiculous.
Chaz?
Another thing I might add is that the nature of our profession and the way our working hours are structured is that it's a very irregular schedule. So it may be that in some industries, if you know years in advance even what your schedule is for a certain 9 months, you might be able to find work in those other 3 months. But the nature of our job is that every week we sometimes have a different schedule, and we often don't know what our schedule is until a very short time beforehand. So the opportunity to go to a secondary employer and try to arrange another job, even if we could find that work here in Columbus, there's no employer who would accept you under those circumstances when you would be able to say, I can't tell you when I'm available.
Yeah. So are you ever a bit of a barrel here? Because, I mean, if you finally can't come to an agreement with management on salaries and the salaries they offer are too low. I mean, one of the orchestra members, I think, just took a job in Lubbock, Texas. Would you like to have to do that?
Well, he took a college faculty position, and today those are among the very best jobs that musicians can have.
But in Lubbock, Texas?
Well, I've never been to Lubbock,
I'm,
Texas.
I'm just saying, you know, there are a lot of there probably aren't a lot of opportunities around for orchestra. I mean, you know, how many people did you have auditioning for a recent opening of the orchestra? 270 something people audition when you have an opening. I mean, that's there aren't a lot of job opportunities around, are there?
Well, I can certainly say also that the other part of this is I love Columbus. I've enjoyed living here very much and raising my family here. I love the community here and the support that we feel when we play. And, of course, I don't want to go someplace else and start afresh. But like all the musicians of the orchestra, I am forced under these circumstances to be looking at those other opportunities and looking at other jobs.
Are you pretty confident that we're going to have an orchestra here in the fall? Are you optimistic about your negotiations coming up with the management?
We're going to do the very best we can to salvage the situation. Unfortunately, the board's decision to cancel the summer season has made that much more difficult. Tony and Buzz in the previous half hour admitted that the summer season usually breaks even, but they expressed the concern about rain. I'm very sorry they didn't tell you the fact that the symphony routinely purchases rain insurance. Believe it or not, you can purchase a rain policy. And so had there been rain and had there been a significant loss of income as a result, the symphony would have been covered. And so there was really no reason to cancel the summer season.
If there was no reason to cancel the summer season, they said they didn't have the upfront money, the cash money to negotiate with guest artists. But if you say there was no reason to cancel the summer Pops concerts, why do you think they canceled them?
I think they may have done it to put pressure on us, perhaps even pressure on the city, to ask the question, does the city really want the orchestra?
We have an email question here from Phil at openline@wosu.org. He says, I have a question to the musicians. The board in the last half hour states that the Kappa numbers in the musicians' report are completely wrong. Where did the numbers in the report come from? That's the idea that Kappa had increased the rent on the theater, on the Ohio Theater for the orchestra by 68%. And Buzz Trafford said in the last half hour that's absolutely wrong.
I'm amazed that Buzz made that statement. Those are numbers from the IRS 990 tax returns that the Symphony files under occupancy. And Kappa is the only or the biggest lessor that we pay rent to. And so I can't imagine what that occupancy figure is if it's not for Kappa expenses. And it has, in fact, doubled in the last 2 years. And it's on their tax returns.
So you're saying, I think you said at the news conference, that Kappa was increasing the rent on the theater for the season for the orchestra by 68% for the fall season. Is that right?
Well, there was an increase in 1 year of 68% at the same time.
Previously.
At the same time that concerts were cut. And so it makes no sense.
So we have two very different sets of numbers here, one presented by management that said that there wasn't much of an increase at all, and you're saying big increase.
Well, the board and the management have essentially been keeping two sets of books all along, one with the in-kind component, which is correct, and which they report to the IRS and auditors, another set of books that they discuss publicly. And you can't do that. You have to go with the one correct set of books.
Why would the management keep two sets of books?
I believe they want to purposely not include the in-kind component for reasons that I can't explain.
Reasons you cannot explain. All right, but you grant their sincerity. You say they are a sincere negotiating partner.
I think that they have every wish to make an agreement with us, and that's why we've agreed to meet with them on Monday.
Okay, we're with the musicians Doug Fisher, second bassoon of the Columbus Symphony Orchestra, president of the Central Ohio Federation of Musicians, Local 103. Charles Weatherby is first violinist and concertmaster of the Columbus Symphony Orchestra. Call us to you now. Please keep your questions and comments brief so we can get to as many of you as we can. Bob, thanks for holding. Hi, you're on the air.
Thank you. Doug, a question. Would you tell us where we could send letters to Mr. Trafford, perhaps making suggestions on points of negotiation that the symphony might have? For starters, I would suggest that instead of musicians taking a 40% pay cut, perhaps the administration should take a 40% pay cut. And number two, this is something I talked about to the Columbus City Council this previous Monday. After the agreement is reached, could the Board of Trustees and the union get together to go to City Council and request that the City of Columbus build the Columbus Symphony, its own world-class concert hall, so that rent isn't being paid out, and, you know, that situation would be solved.
Okay, there's been a lot of talk about that performing arts center downtown and a world-class concert hall, but nothing seems to get off the dime, huh?
Yeah, I think it's a wonderful idea, but it's a little bit far in the future. There's no point in having a world-class concert hall if you don't support and sustain world-class arts institutions. And so I think we need to first focus on the symphony structure, and once it's healthy, then look to perhaps building a concert hall.
I think also that, speaking to Doug's point, that the sustainability of the orchestra is something that we, both sides, musicians and management, both agree that it is what we are talking about. And I think that the issue of a concert hall, as Doug said, has to come second, although it's obviously something that would be very, very important and wonderful for the city. I think the first thing that would have to take place is an endowment drive for the orchestra to stabilize the finances of the orchestra. And that's something that is sometimes considered a chicken and an egg. You have to be stable to start an endowment, but without an endowment, how do you achieve stability? I think that one thing we might agree upon is that from this moment forward, from today, we could begin an endowment drive, and that endowment drive would ensure the long-term future of this great orchestra.
What do you think over 57 years the orchestra hasn't managed to accumulate a significant endowment?
It's truly a mystery. And, you know, 10 years ago when the orchestra was doing very well, consecutive years of surpluses, we asked the musicians, why don't we start an endowment drive? And the answer was, because you're running surpluses, there's really no need for an endowment. And then once we hit the bad years, we said, well, we need an endowment drive. And the answer was, well, you're doing poorly, and no one wants to back a loser.
Our caller asked about – yes, Jazz, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think in more general terms, sometimes I think of it as it seems like a large problem. Like, it seems like a mountain. How do you climb the mountain? And there's many reasons why you can't. You look at Mount Everest and you say, I can think of 50 reasons why no one can climb it. But one person came along and said, I don't know how I'll do it, but I'm going to. And then, of course, it happens because human willpower is stronger than these minor obstacles. And the same is true of an endowment. We've seen over the last few months an incredible outpouring of support from Columbus, from the community, for the orchestra. I believe in my heart that, again, if we were to simply start an endowment drive right this minute, that it would be successful because I believe the will of the community is there, and this is something that can take place. Regardless of the small obstacles or problems that you might see as being in front of you in order to accomplish that.
Our caller asked for your thoughts about a potential management cut in salaries.
Yes. Well, obviously, if we accept a cut in salary, we expect what's called an equality of sacrifice. That's only natural. If we take a 5% pay cut, we would ask management to take a 5% pay cut.
I'd like to say also that up till now, the plan from management, as I understand it, just not being, of course, not being at the bargaining table, but as I understand it, there was no future outlined really in that plan. So if you ask people to take a sacrifice, which in the short term could be necessary, in order to make that sacrifice worthwhile, you have to outline how it will help the future health and stability of the organization and actually give the people making that sacrifice something to look towards.
Let us go back to our callers here. Don is next. Hello, Don.
Hi, Fred. I've got a question for the entire panel. As a citizen of Columbus, and this is the community's orchestra, this isn't a private venture, it belongs to all of us, and it reflects on us in many, many ways. It looks to me like the whole thing is broken. A lot of times in business, when that happens, you just dissolve it, start all over. I know there's personalities involved, but the bottom line is I don't think it's been managed very well. It doesn't look like it. The results are poor. The musicians are unhappy. We know there's musicians that would love to come and play in an orchestra. We can tell that by the turnout you just talked about for tryouts. I think it probably just needs to be dissolved completely, and a complete new model needs to come in with all new people. Nothing personal for all you people. Don't know any of you. But as a citizen and looking at it on a blackboard, that's what I look at.
Well, I guess that happened in San Diego. That happened in Buffalo. The symphonies went out of business for a couple of years, dissolved apparently the organization, and came back strong. What do you think?
Well, in both those examples, the same orchestras came back. They were not completely dissolved. They were out of business for a short period of time, and they came back. His suggestion is not very practical. It would take many, many years to start a brand new orchestra from scratch. You have to remember, it's not just about bringing a group of highly talented people together and shabam, they can play great music. It takes many, many years of working with each other to finally hone a high-quality ensemble. The Columbus Symphony today's artistic quality has taken decades to build. And once it's gone, and you start from scratch.
I would also like to say that I think everyone in our organization agrees that if we were to hold the mirror up to ourselves, there are multiple ways that we could change and improve how we run this orchestra. And I certainly think there's no reason other than the fact that as people we might get set in our ways, what other obstacle is there to simply saying we are going to change some of the things that need to be in order to run, to be a better orchestra?
A question for you. Both sides, management and musicians, seem to be doing a lot of blaming of the other side. Is the current situation, in your opinion, all the management's fault, or do musicians have to take some of the responsibility here?
I don't think the musicians are at fault at all. We have done nothing but to do our jobs, which is to play the very best that we possibly can at all times. And our orchestra's quality proves that fact.
All right. Let us go to Tina. Tina, thanks for holding. Hi.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call. Actually, your quote, whose fault is it, goes right to the comments that I wanted to make. I've lived in Columbus for 22 years. I came here to go to college. And I have watched, heard, listened to the symphony grow as an ensemble during that time. I'm very middle class. I live in a $150 house, but I love classical music. And I personally appreciate so much the ensemble that the symphony musicians have created. So personally, I am so frustrated to hear in the media how what's been transpiring. I think that the Dispatch coverage has been very, very biased. And I feel that what's been said by the board leadership and administration has been condescending and not completely honest against the musicians. I feel like they're trying to balance the budget on the backs of the musicians. I think that they should be, instead of focusing on what the musicians are being paid, which is very middle class to begin with, they should be focusing on doing their jobs, which is raising money
okay.
and running the administrative side.
Do you have a question here? Tina, do you have a question for our guests?
That's my comment,
that's your comment,
and I would like them to comment on my comment.
Okay, thanks.
Well, one of the things that struck me early on was something that was in the Dispatch in the editorials, and this was one of the earlier editorials that was written there. And the quote was, forgive me if I don't get it word for word correct, but that it doesn't matter how we've gotten here. It just matters where we are. And that right there struck me as being one of the most dead wrong things that I'd heard about the whole circumstance, because how we got here is incredibly important, because if we can't learn from history, of course, as they say, we will repeat it. How we got into this predicament has everything to do with how we run ourselves as an orchestra, how we've conducted business, the choices we've made in planning, whether we've ever engaged in an endowment drive or not, and a myriad of things. How we got here is absolutely crucial, and to, as I said before, to figuring out what we need to change so that, in fact, we have a secure future for this orchestra, which is what I think the community of Columbus wants.
Okay, well, thank you, Tina. Let's go to our next caller. Joanne, hi, you're on the air.
Hello?
Yes, you're on.
Oh, good. I wanted to ask Mr. Trafford, but that's all right. I'll just ask anyone. Why don't all members of the CSS Symphony Board of Trustees buy season tickets, contribute money to the orchestra themselves personally, and attend concerts? What purpose do they serve except to attempt to destroy our wonderful orchestra? I understand the trustees for the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra contribute thousands. Even the Baltimore Orioles contribute money to the symphony.
Point of information, Joanna, Buzz Trafford's, the board director, said in the last half hour that I believe all but one member of the board had contributed to the symphony this year. You know, one member contributes millions of dollars to the symphony. So at least, and one very generous member of the board, Ann Melvin, said she used to be on the board in the 1980s, and she's back on the board now. And she said the board is working three times as hard as they did in the 1980s. Now,
well, I question that because I attend most all concerts, and I don't see them at the concerts.
Comment for my musicians. Doug? Chaz?
I think many of the board members are, in fact, passionate about the symphony and do work extremely hard and give in many ways. Monetary support is just one of the ways board members help to keep our orchestra going. And I think that from what I can tell, I think many board members are simply discouraged because, again, we have not seen alternatives to proposed to how we can go forward as a strong organization. And against just what I my comment about the Dispatch editorial, if you think it doesn't matter how we got here, again, it's very difficult then to start thinking about how we might go forward with optimism and with a bright future, which in fact we can do because all over the country, many orchestras are doing extremely well. There was a New York Times article recently that wrote about this being a golden age for symphonic music in America. And there are many, many facts and figures to back that up, rising attendance, rising endowments, rising contributions to symphonies.
Has the Columbus Symphony Orchestra had rising attendance? Not counting the last few concerts, which are sort of farewell concerts, it could be thought of that way.
I believe Tony Beadle told me recently that this season it's up 10%. And, you know, part of that might be because of our situation, but I believe it's much more than that. I think as the word about the orchestra is getting out there, people are coming and discovering how wonderful an experience it is, and they're wanting to come back.
Okay. Time for Bob, if you're very quick, we can get to your question. Hi.
Hi. I'm asking particularly a further question about the labor relations, because all around us there are other communities, and now you cited the article in the Times, where they have solved this problem. I've been going to concerts for 30 years here and have heard this orchestra play better and better and better, and honestly, these last few concerts have been very good. Now, my question is, all through that time, the labor relations have been bad and now, again, worse. And the management is unwilling to talk about the idea that what they're really proposing is another part-time orchestra back to where we were, I don't know, 30 years ago. My question here is, why have these people been unwilling to learn how other communities have successfully managed this? Because they do put themselves against the interests of the orchestra.
All right, we just have a minute left. Of course, the original board proposal was to cut full-time musicians from 53 to 31, and you have found that unacceptable. And I don't imagine the board was very happy to have had to propose that either. But they say you got to be realistic about the budget.
Well, we also have to be realistic about what you need to run a symphony orchestra. It takes anywhere from 75 to 100 highly skilled artists to perform at a high level. And it cannot be done with only 31 full-time players. There simply are not enough high-caliber musicians to fill the ranks. I mean, if we fire 22 people, they will have to leave Columbus and find other jobs.
Also, I'd like to quickly speak to the caller's question. I think we would welcome to the opportunity to bring in a third party, someone from another city, someone who has credibility both in the symphonic world and the business world, who would help tell our organization, tell our orchestra how other communities are doing it so that we can learn from that.
Final 30 seconds, you're going to be meeting with management on Monday. Your prediction, is there going to be a Columbus Symphony Orchestra season in October?
We're going to do everything we possibly can to salvage this very difficult situation.
We'd like to thank from the musicians, Doug Fisher, Charles Weatherby. Thanks for being with us. We'd also like to thank in the first half hour, Buzz Trafford and Tony Beadle from Management and Board of Trustees of the Columbus Symphony Orchestra. Thanks to everybody for calling on listener-supported WOSU and WOSU HD 820 Columbus, streaming on the web at WOSU.org, WOSU 820 NPR News.